Today on The Grave Talks, evil souls or demons? A conversation with Christina Westervelt. When you grow up with a dad that loves the paranormal, it's not shocking that a daughter would eventually find her way into serious paranormal investigations when she got older. That's the story of Christina Westervelt. What started as a fun fascination and outing with dad quickly turned into a lifelong quest of seeking out the supernatural, trying to understand the who, what, where, and whys, ultimately discovering that she would be left with far more questions than answers.
I wish I could tell you that I have this awesome story about how I grew up in a creepy haunted house, but I don't. I blame it on my father. I grew up watching horror movies. You know, I was like six watching Hellraiser and like the old Romero zombie movies and Pumpkinhead. So I grew up watching horror movies. And, you know, once Ghost Hunters and stuff like that came out, me and my dad, that was our family time. Mm-hmm. I am an only child. You know, my parents got divorced when I was young. So me and my dad would sit and we'd watch Ghost Hunters and all the paranormal shows. And, you know, it just kind of grew from there. You know, my dad's always been into that stuff. And I know I grew my love from it from, you know, spending the time watching it with him. And it's just always fascinated me. So it kind of went from there. You know, I remember in grammar school or something, high school, I'm not sure exactly when. My dad brought me my first K2 meter. That was like my first little piece of equipment. And mm-hmm. it was like the old school K2 meter that like Grant and Jason used to use, that you had to like stick a like coin in it to keep it. I actually have one now. I still have it. But so, you know, we would go to like graveyards. I'd go with my friends every year since I was young. Me and my dad would go to Salem, Massachusetts, and we'd do the ghost tours and all that stuff. And, you know, it just escalated and escalated. And then finally, during quarantine, like 3 years ago, or around 3 years ago almost, I was sitting there and I was just kind of like, I'm seeing all these places. So like when I was in my, I'm 35 now. So in my young 20s and teenage years and stuff, like it was hard to find anywhere legally to go investigate, you know, and sure. My father's an ex-cop and I wasn't up for the breaking and entering, you know?
Yeah.
And if over the years I've noticed like all these places, huge, well-known places now, you can pay to do a public investigation. You can pay to do a private investigation with your team. You can go and, you know, do this stuff now. So I was like, you know what? Like, life's too short. I'm going to start doing this. I found my buddy Rich that lives near me online, on Facebook, on a paranormal group. And then we had met the team that I am part of today at an investigation at Fort Mifflin. They were hosting it, and they were actually called something else at the time. And we were together for about 2 years, me and that team. And then a bunch of us broke off, and we all started East Coast Paranormal. And that's how I ended up here today.
Interesting. Yeah. So you've a very interesting life of getting into the ghosts early. My daughter is 10, and it's just me and her. And as we go out, sometimes we started doing a little YouTube series called Dad, Daughter, and the Dead in connection with the show. But I got like drones and we're mic'd up and but it's just us kind of wandering around and doing that stuff. So it's cool to hear that you had a very similar experience with your dad. I don't feel so strange now when we're out there.
Oh, no. Listen, I turned out fine. You're fine.
No, that's awesome. So you kind of had this thing where you were kind of experimenting with it. How far did your dad dive into it when you were younger? Obviously, yeah, we're talking, you know, 90s, 80s, 90s, and that sort of area, before television shows and all of that. As time progressed and more of those things went on, did he get as into it as you?
No, you know, my father is an ex-cop, Mm-hmm. And he's always been sensitive. He's always been, my cousins would see, like, my younger cousins see, like dead relatives at the foot of their bed sometimes. And, mm-hmm. like, I think it skipped me because I feel like I'm a ghost repellent sometimes. But, you know, my dad's just kind of always, like, had experiences over the years, shadow figures, this and that, as, you know, when it, at night, working overnights as a police officer and everything. But he's never actually done, like, a real, like, investigation or anything like that. He would love to, but I feel like he just feels like he's too old now, which is not the case, but...
Sure.
Hey, that's him. That's on him.
What, you know, what was, like, some of your earliest memories of ghosts and just this concept? Was it on television? Was it just hearing it from your dad? Or did you guys have an experience together when you were younger?
So no, I actually didn't have my first, like, real paranormal experience, like, personal experience, mm-hmm. till about 3 years ago when I started looking for it.
Really?
And I think that's what really drove me to do it, was it's like, oh my God, this is something I've been so into for so long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of feel crazy because I'm like, I'm not a religious person. I refuse to believe in something that, like, I have no proof is real. And here I am believing in the paranormal, and I got no proof for myself that this is real. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, but yeah, like, believing in stuff that you don't even know for sure exists,
sure.
was like a super drive for me, you know, like, all right, like, I feel crazy and let's go see what's out there, you
sure.
know. So I didn't have anything. I mean, I'm sure I'm like one of those super skeptical investigators and so is most of my team.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm sure I've probably had experiences over my lifetime that I've just chalked up to being nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But my first real experience was my first investigation, like real investigation. And boy, was it a first investigation. I you know, biggest location I could find. I did. It was Mid-Orange Correctional Facility in Warwick, New York. Me and my buddy Rich and a couple of my friends went, and this place is awesome. It's actually called the Hudson Sports Complex now. It's about an hour away from me. And they did a couple episodes of Ghost Nation there. So I had my first experience there where I was in one of the, there's like the main building, and it used to be a, like a school, like a, I think it was like a rehab, like, center. It was, like a state school. It was, there was a lot of history behind it, but it was also a prison at one point. And they have a bunch of little outskirts buildings from, like, the main building. And they call it the A3 building. And they're even on the show, but, I mean, I've been there a few times now. And every time, like, these little buildings on the outskirts are super active for some reason. So I remember standing there in the hallway. And I had my REM pod, which is a little circular device with an antenna, and it emits its own EMF field.
Yep.
So if something comes in, like, in theory, if a ghost touches it or, you know, walks by it close enough, it'll break that EMF field and it'll alarm.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm standing there, and all of a sudden I get crazy, like, head to toe, like, pins and needle goosebumps, like chills, like you stuck your finger in a light socket, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden my REM pod starts going off, like, simultaneously. And I was like, mm-hmm. I'm like, that's interesting. Cause, you know, a human mind is crazy. You can psych yourself out. You can get, like, you know, the chills and stuff from, you know, mentally psyching yourself out from stuff. But the fact that my REM pod went off at the, like, right after that happened was kind of, very gratifying.
Yeah,
you know?
At the least suspicious, you know, because you have two things happening at once, you and then that device as well.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I use equipment for, you know, to validate my personal experiences. I don't rely solely on my personal experiences. I don't rely solely on my equipment. I use them in tandem. So, mm-hmm.
Sure. So you have this, it's going off, you're having these feelings and that the REM pod's going off. How does the investigation continue? And did anything else happen at that moment?
Yes. So I actually was with my buddy Rob, and he's like the EVP master, and I wish I still had this. He deleted it on me. I'm very mad, and I don't even remember what it said, but I remember I did my first like real EVP session with him, and I got like some very direct responses back when we played. So, you know, we had a recorder and I would ask some questions, he would ask some questions, and we play it back, and you hear responses that you didn't hear with your own ears. And I was like, wow, like that's crazy. We had footsteps. Later on that night, we went back to the A3 building since it was so active earlier. And we were upstairs. We didn't go upstairs into the second floor, but because we heard these footsteps just like up there. And it was just like this weird, weird feeling. My buddy Rich got sick to his stomach and had to run out of the building, like, which is not an uncommon claim for sensitive people around, like, you know, spirits and stuff like that. So sure. We just had a lot of, like, you know, that's the thing. Like, I have never seen a ghost jump out in front of me and do the jig, but, you know, I've had plenty of interesting and curious experiences that kind of just gives you enough that you want more, you know?
Sure, it certainly piques curiosity to to keep going and experiencing. So when you were having these literally first type of experiences, and then listening to the EVPs and picking up that, and you being a skeptic, which is a healthy good thing, what's going through? Are you starting to kind of feel some confirmation here that these are real, that you had encounters with these things, or are you still trying to? And feeling like, well, there's something else here going on.
So when I say I'm a skeptic, I say I am a skeptical believer.
Sure.
In the sense where I'm very hard to impress with evidence. I mean, I was psyched. I was pretty, you know, that was definitely some good confirmation for me, you know, but still, it just kind of wet my palate. I'm like, all right, I need more. I think the most crazy experience that I cannot explain and 100% confirms that the paranormal exists for me is I was in Pennhurst, which is in Spring City, Pennsylvania. Pennhurst Asylum, they do a haunted attraction every year, but it was also a state school. It was a mental asylum. There's a lot of history behind it. The place is massive, multiple buildings. The property is amazing. It's spooky. The buildings are so cool looking. I love it. It is my number one favorite place to investigate. I've probably investigated there about 8 times over the past 2 years. And I even have my best friend's bachelorette party there.
Nice.
That's it's an investigation. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I have to say that's a new one. I haven't heard someone doing that before.
Yeah, and it was her first. She's always been into it, but she moved to South Carolina. It was her first investigation, and I surprised her for her bachelor party. But so they have tunnels, a tunnel system that goes underground, and it attaches to each of the buildings. And we were in the Rockwell Tunnel, which is the name of the one tunnel. It's so long. It's like 1,500. Like, it's a really long tunnel.
Yeah.
It's dark. It's creepy. There's bats flying around. And so we were down there, and I was down there with my friend Eric and his fiance at the time, my team member Jim, my team member Patrick, and we were just sitting there, and maybe little hits on the equipment here and there, nothing crazy. And then my buddy Rich came down with another one of our team members and sat down with us. And he had been sitting down there with us for maybe 20 minutes now, and all of a sudden he goes, ow. And I'm like, and I'm sitting right across from him, like looking at him, and it's dark, but he's like, we have the light from our equipment. I could see him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was cold out. It was like 40 degrees out. We all had like jackets, sweatshirts, everything. And we all look at him like, what happened? And he goes, you know, ow. And he pulls his sleeve up, and he's got full top and bottom mouth teeth print on his arm. And I don't know any of the listeners or you have ever been bit by an animal or a kid or whatever, but when you first get bit, it's like kind of stays in that form, and it's like flesh colored.
Yeah.
And then after like 30 seconds or so, it starts to turn like pink and swell.
Mm-hmm.
So like, as we're staring at his arm with the flashlight on him, it just starts turning pink and swelling in front of all of our eyes. And we're just all sitting there with our mouths open, like, what? Like, there's no way he bit himself. There's no way he did it in front of me. There's no way he did it 20 minutes before he came down, because I'm watching it turn red in front of my eyes. This just happened, you know? And I was like, it was absolutely crazy. And the funny thing, he stood up. He's like, hey, who bit me? You know, like, we're just so, like, you know, we've done so many investigations now that you can't always assume that these things are negative. You know,
sure.
There were mute patients there that maybe they don't know how to communicate other than doing that, you know, mm-hmm. with us. The funny, weird thing, or not really funny, but I guess creepy part of it all, is there was a doctor that worked at Pennhurst back in the day that was notorious for, you know, back in the day, there were mental patients that would bite.
Okay.
And yeah. As punishment, the doctor would yank their teeth out.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So supposedly, I don't know the truth behind this, but from what I hear, like, the building that we were under was one of those buildings that this was reported to happen in. So, it was crazy. A lot of people accuse us of faking it because there are photos. And I don't really care, because it's one of those things that, like, it's not for anyone else. It's for yourself. That was our experience.
Sure.
Between me and my team, you know? And I don't know if I'll ever experience anything like that ever again.
Oh yeah. And anyone can say anything is fake. It's not about, like showing it to everybody else. It's like, you know, some will believe, some will not. It's mm-hmm. like, giving up on trying to convince anybody anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, but so this, obviously it looked like a human bite mark based on what you're telling.
Yeah.
Well,
and Rich has a big mouth. My friend Rich is a big dude. He's got a big mouth. His nickname on my team is Chit Chat.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't shut up. So, and it was like small. It was like a small mouth print, like a child or a woman. And the teeth were like, I actually showed the photo to my dentist. I had a teeth cleaning that week, the next week. And I showed the photo to my dentist. And he's like, that looks like it's missing teeth.
I was just going to ask you, was there was there any way to tell if he got gummed, essentially?
It looks like either the teeth were really messed up, jagged, not facing the right way, or there were missing teeth there.
And how interesting that it was distinct enough for a dentist to look at that and go, yeah, that's a bite mark, and the placement of the teeth, too, you know? That's mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was absolutely blew my mind.
I was gonna ask you, like, well, that's interesting to be bitten by a person, but then you gave me the history of what was going on there, and it all adds up then for, yeah, that totally makes sense that this is a place where you would be bitten by a spirit. So what do you make of it in this specific situation? Totally an opinion question. When something like that is there and happened, is that the ghost or the spirit of one of the former patients there doing it? Is that a conscious effort, or is this some sort of residual thing that's going on and his arm just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time for a bite?
You know, that's a really good question. And I don't really know that I can definitively answer that for you. But, I mean, they usually chalk up, like, scratches and bites as pretty intelligent haunting.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. There's 100% residual hauntings going on in Pennhurst, but there's definitely very, intelligent activity going on there as well. I mean, I don't know how to even say that. You don't know. And that's the crazy thing about this field. People talk so definitively about things, and it's just, none of us know. And you know, half the time when you communicate with some of these, you know, entities, you question whether or not they know they're even passed away at all. So it's like, we might not even know once we are passed away.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing. And I try to understand that. And the only thing that I can come to is some experiences I've had in dreams. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on trying to understand what it's like to not know that you're dead when you're dead. I've had dreams where I am literally in almost like a different place, not a different time, but like in a different place. I'm me, but I know all these people around me that I don't know in real life. But in the dream, it's like, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so. It's almost like I take on a totally different identity, but it's still me. Mm-hmm. And it's a current time thing. And I have no recollection of my real current life at all. Like there may be like a little sliver there where I'm like, where do I live? It's almost like amnesia-ish. It's like, mm-hmm. do I have a daughter? You know, do I have a girlfriend? Am I married? What's going on? And I just have no clue what the hell is real. And I have no recollection of those things. I can't even think of those things because this other world is what is real to me. And there's like not really much of a sense of time either, but the consciousness of what we know in this world, in our conscious living world, is not there at all. So that's mm-hmm. the only way I could kind of contemplate what it would be like being a ghost is just that knowledge is just simply wiped. You know, there's something kind of off, but it's, you just don't know. I wonder if that's what it would feel like to be a ghost on the other side that's, you know, going through their daily routine but never quite noticing or realizing you're just doing the same things over and over, or you're just kind of meandering this space that's no longer yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of crazy theories. Dreams are, you know, I had a situation happen to me at the Shantley Hotel, mm-hmm. and I don't know if it was a dream or if I was awake. And this is, I think, the most disturbing part of this. But I was at the Shantley. It's in Napanock, New York. It's an awesome place. Every time I go, there's always activity. I've never been disappointed once, even if, you know, sometimes it happens while you're investigating. Sometimes it happens while you're sleeping because you do stay there. They have rooms. And we had been investigating till about 4 a.m. And I went back to my room. I was sharing a room with my friend Christina's son, Anthony, one of our team members. He's our youngest member. He's like 18 now. Mm-hmm. And he was already sleeping. So I went in, took my makeup off, got changed, got my pajamas. I don't sleep well there. For some reason, I just sleep terribly at the Shantley. And I'm trying to fall asleep. And I fall asleep, and I had activity in that bathroom of that one room. I stay in that same room. It's the Rose Room. And I stay there in that room every time I go there. Mm-hmm. And I've probably been there like 6 times already now as well. And I had, last time I was there before that, I woke up and there was just something walking around the bathroom. You hear tap, 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 tap around the floor. You hear the door creaking. And, you know, my friend Megan woke up and was like, oh, do you hear that? I'm like, yeah, I've been listening to it for like 45 minutes. And she's like, oh my God. And so she sits up and she's like, what the hell? And it stops. And we were just sitting there. We're sitting there. And like 10 minutes later, it just starts up again. So a year later, I'm there again. I point my camera. I have a full spectrum camera. So I pointed it at the door and let it run to the bathroom. And an hour later, I wake up and I look and my camera's, the video camera's dead. But I mean, those batteries don't last terribly long. So I didn't think anything of it. And I went back to sleep. And then I wake up and I go to move and I can't move. I literally like hear and feel like the bed flex, like something sat or is like pushing down on me in the bed. I can't move. I panic and I go to scream for my friend Anthony, who's sleeping in the bed next to me. Nothing comes out of my mouth, nothing at all. And I'm just sitting there like panicking. And finally, like I kind of come to and I get up and I don't remember waking up. Like when I came to and I could move and I could talk again, I don't remember being asleep, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have a history of sleep paralysis, because that is a medical condition that people have.
Sure.
That have these types of experiences, and I don't have a history of it. Don't remember waking up. I just remember my eyes already being open.
Mm-hmm.
So I put my sweatshirt on, I put my shoes on, I went downstairs, I sat in the common area for 3 hours. It was 6 a.m. at this point.
Yeah.
I sat in the common area for 3 hours by myself so everyone would come. And I was just kind of like in shock, you know.
Sure.
I was terrified, but like fascinated and so happy that happened, because it makes me a more, you know, seasoned investigator, you know, having those types of experiences. But it shook me. I was pretty distraught for like a good month or two. And I actually haven't stayed there again. One, I sleep, like I said, I sleep like garbage. And the day after investigating at the Shanley is rough. You know, you don't get any sleep. And you try to function, it's absolutely horrible, even when you go to bed. And but I've investigated there, but it, like I said, it's very close to me, so mm-hmm. I've been going home afterwards and not sleeping there because I prefer to get some rest.
Yeah,
and have something like that happen again.
When you were not able to move, what did it? Did you have any feelings in your body? Did you have any sense of anything?
The only thing I could tell is two things. I felt the bed move. Like, I felt it flex.
Okay.
Like, there was weight. There was weight on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I also heard, you know, like, when you go to hotels and they're not, like, your comforter at your house. They're kind of crunchy and, like, hard and, like, starchy.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Like, the comfort. And I could hear, like, the crunch of the comforter.
Interesting.
And that's all I picked up on it.
It's interesting. I've had a similar experience, and it's the way you describe that is very similar to the way mine was, because it's not quite sleep paralysis. I told myself that it was that for many years because it just seemed like an easier explanation. But after doing the show for 10 years and hearing all the variations of this, I don't think mine was either. But it was in my first apartment. I was 18 years old, and I was awake. I do not remember being asleep at all. My memory is I'm awake, and suddenly I sit up. Something startled me. I don't know what it was, but something alerted me. And I sat up, and when I sat up, I couldn't move. And I was leaning against my headboard, and I was frozen. I could see, but I just shut my eyes because I'm like, what is going on? And I was paralyzed, but what felt like was paralyzation, but then I described it as almost like static electricity moving through you. But mm-hmm. It was like a cloud. Mm-hmm. I always would say a cloud. Then somebody recently shared a story and they said like static electricity. I'm like, yes, that's it. And it just kind of slowly moved. And then when that feeling was done, I was released and everything was normal, but it was just the strangest thing. And it startled me. And actually this was years before podcasts even existed. I ended up like reaching out to a paranormal investigator in the area and said, what is this? What just happened to me? And then I learned more about sleep paralysis, but it is a very startling thing to go through something like that.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. Looking back, I mean, that was super cool.
Yeah.
You know,
it's cool.
Now that it's not, that moment has passed.
Yeah, but do you want to test it again? Do you want to go back and see if it happens again and maybe experiment a little bit more with that moment and try and soak it in and not just be like, what the hell's going on?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I'm actually going back. September 24th, I will be helping out with my friend Scotty the Medium. He is hosting the world's largest ghost hunt there at the Shanley, and he had asked me and my boyfriend to help him out at the event. So we're going to be helping out with the tours and the investigations and stuff like that. I'm not going to stay there. I can't. My dad's going to be away. I got a dog sit, so I actually unfortunately have to go home.
You got a dog just to not go there.
But no, my team, we like going there every year. My team, East Coast Paranormal, we usually book a night there every year. So I'm sure I will be staying overnight eventually, probably sometime next year.
Sure. You had said you don't sleep well at the Shanley. Are there other locations that you've investigated, whether they be, you know, location specific for, you know, haunted research or just like a haunted hotel in general that is active and is running, where you do sleep better?
Honestly, no, because I just sleep like garbage unless it's in my own bed. Okay. Like, even when I go, like, to, like, the Marriott, I don't sleep well, but, it's just worse when I'm at the Shanley. Even, we stayed at a Clarion Hotel in DuBois, Pennsylvania, that had asked us to come and investigate because they were having, you know, activity and they didn't know what to do about it, so... It was, they reached out to us, asked us to come check it out, and I stayed there, and I did not sleep well there either. I don't know. It's like a mix between just not being able to sleep well in, like, places that aren't your house, or also, like, knowing of what's going on. I mean, mentally, like, I'm not afraid. Like, I'm not going to bed there, like, oh my God, I'm terrified, I can't sleep. It's just, like, I can take a melatonin and a muscle relaxer because I have TMJ, so I take them at night for my jaw. And, like, normally that'll knock me out in 20 minutes. And that night I took that and I couldn't sleep. I still couldn't sleep.
It's interesting. And you being an investigator and having more people on your team, what I'm curious about here is when people are staying over at a haunted location and the intent is to sleep at some point, do you find that you have other members of your team that are the opposite, where they sleep better in those sorts of locations and others are more awake when they otherwise maybe shouldn't be, especially if you're taking a muscle relaxer or something that otherwise does put you out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my boyfriend said he falls asleep no problem at the Shanley all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't, he doesn't seem to bother him any, but
I wonder sometimes if there is something going on that affects people where one will stay up more and one may sleep even better. The few times I've stayed at a haunted place that I did on purpose, I slept some of the best sleep of my life. It was so bizarre because I normally do wake up quite a bit. But there was a couple hotels that I've stayed at. One was in Michigan. I think also the Stanley in Colorado.
Oh my God, I would love to go there.
Those two nights, I went to bed and I stayed out. And that is not normal for me. When I was in Michigan, I was doing a morning show up there. And it was a Halloween episode. And we were going to do our show live the next morning from the hotel, which we did. And I fell asleep wonderfully. My co-host, who was across the hall, didn't sleep well at all. She said she heard people in the hallways and like party like atmosphere. There was no one there at all. It was out of the tourist season. There was like literally the owner left the building and we were in it and then came back in the morning for the show. But it was so strange that she was hearing all these things and I was completely out. That's why I wonder sometimes if something is trying to keep others out while others are, you know, being alerted to these sort of things. It's just an interesting phenomenon that I've seen a few times.
Yeah, you know, I think another major factor in it is for me is that I can't turn investigation mode off in my brain.
Okay.
So I'm laying there and I'm like, all right, this is, you know, a lot of people experience stuff when they're trying to sleep or when they're sleeping and like my brain doesn't shut off, you know,
it's kind of like
alert
waiting.
And waiting. I'm sitting there waiting for something to happen that like I have a hard time relaxing. I don't know.
Sure. Sure. And that would, yeah. And if you're going in circles there, that would certainly kind of keep you up. That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Christina. We're going to go deeper in the next one. When the world is shrouded with evil people and shocking true crime headlines daily, how far off are these dead souls from being a demon? Is it always possible to cleanse a home of dark spirits who were once living? Those questions and many more in part two. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.